The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
Hello and welcome. He is Gary McNamara. I'm Eric Harley. As we move into a Wednesday, Gary, good morning.
Good morning. Game on.
After 2 years, 1.4 million pages of documents, 500 search warrants, 500 witnesses, 2,800 subpoenas, and 40 FBI agents working round the clock, what did they come up with? No collusion. And the facts that led our great attorney general to determine no obstruction. Our country is now thriving, prospering, and booming. And frankly, it's soaring to incredible new heights. Our economy is the envy of the world, perhaps the greatest economy we've had in the history of our country. The only thing these corrupt politicians will understand is an earthquake at the ballot box. That's what they will understand, and they're going to see it. We did it once, and now we will do it again. And this time, we're going to finish the job.
There you go.
All right.
Game on.
Yeah. Yep. Classic there at the end, finish the job. You know, give me 4 more years to finish what we started. That's pretty much it. First of all, you can't help but notice the energy there in Orlando. It was big. It was huge.
Well, I was reading from thehill.com and I was relating some of it to you in our pre-show meeting where it said the five takeaways.
Mm-hmm.
One thing is it took him over an hour to get to the good things and talk about the economy. Yeah. And it was the complaining and Mueller and all this. And they did their five takeaways. I'm like, there are zero takeaways from this.
Zero. No,
I'm sorry. I said there are zero. And then you said, no, there's one.
Okay, which is the energy.
Which is the energy
but,
that comes
but
from
in
it.
Terms of his plan, you know, they were like, okay, here's what he...
Yeah, no idea.
All right, you really can't say that.
No, you can't.
You can't say that, no. Especially with this president. You know where he stands. Border control. You know where he stands on the economy. So, there's where we are.
Well, and that was part of the criticism that you saw from the left. Well, he's just reverting back to the 2016 issues. That's because the 2016 issues
are still
the 2020 issues.
Yes. Yeah.
Because they haven't been solved of what?
Well,
because Democrats don't wish to go in that direction.
Right. The Republicans didn't get it done either. We know that. But again, we told the president, you out of any modern president, he has the ability, I think, and is justified, would have been back then. It was, look. Every day I'm asking for, you know, the House to fund the wall. I'm asking for the House, call your representatives. They're not doing it. I don't care if they're Republican or Democrats. We want the wall built. We're trying to secure the border. And just leave it at that. What I do wonder is imagine next year, November 3rd, there's a new class of Republicans ushered in. Let's say the president wins. Easily, if he wins easily, I guess there's good reason to believe that a good possibility that the Republicans could control the House again. Let's entertain that for a second. If they do, first of all, I don't know who would be the Speaker of the House. Not sure, but would the Republican Party be in line with spending on the wall? And if the House is in line with spending on the wall, and they get it done, what happens with it in the Senate with a Mitch McConnell or anyone else? I'm just wondering out loud. I really don't know, and we have to get there first. But The energy in Orlando is exactly what we saw or and have been seeing at rallies leading up to this. We saw it in 2016. The media is going to cover it. They're going to do, you know, there's really no way to not cover it anymore. In 2016, you could get away with doing just a little bit of a shot and then, you know, at the rally and then moving on to something else. But when it's a sitting president, it's a bigger story. And so I think there will be greater coverage of it, but there won't need to be. Remember, the president or the candidate then, all of that support that was coming with him, he was still facing headwinds from the right even. I mean, we go back to Jeff Sessions being one of the first Republicans officially on board with the Trump campaign. And, you know, the Never Trumper thing was pretty much, well, it was very much alive. Now it's George Will and Bill Kristol sitting in a corner going, what happened? So you wonder now, because the Never Trumper thing is gone. I'm not saying that there won't be people out there, conservatives, that won't stay home. There will be a few, but it won't be many. So what changes, or what has to change? We've been talking about it. What has to change is the people in the center, the middle. And that will all be riding on, really, the economy. I think anything else falls away. I think the economy will drive people in the middle.
Well, a couple of things. It's clear, and, you know, we said this back when the Ann Coulter sect of Trump support were screaming betrayal and that Trump's never going to get the wall and saying he should just demand that it be done. And we said at that point that was part of the demographic that voted for Trump, the ones always wallers.
That's right.
And but if as you see last night, there is a significant portion of his base and probably the majority of the base that look at it and say there is still nobody else in this country who we believe actually wishes to have better border security. Did he succeed in getting the wall? No. Did he succeed in getting Mexico to pay for it? No. But I'll tell you that most Trump supporters that I talked to never expected that Mexico was going to pay for it to begin with. And so when it comes to that, when it comes to border security, there still is no one in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party, because the Democrats, by the way, he did call them out on open borders. Now he has to explain why. Just calling them out, and we've told this to the president before, just don't say open borders. Explain why. Explain what we have said, which is they always talk about comprehensive immigration reform, but they never get down to the details. And if you get down to the details, they are for open borders. And if the media or they respond tomorrow, ask them one question. Then what would you do to secure the border? Let's say we had amnesty tomorrow. Let's say we had an agreement with amnesty tomorrow. Would they then say that from this particular date, from this point on, that illegal immigration is actually illegal and we're going to secure our borders? I can tell you they will not.
No.
And, you know, one of the things we talked about last week is when Jake Tapper confronted skater Bob O'Rourke and said, do you agree with Julian Castro, who said that we should make it where it's no longer a crime to cross the border? And he hemmed and hawed, and he asked him the question, follow-up, still didn't answer the question, finally asked him, but you're not answering my question. Do you agree that it should not be a crime? And he said, no, that he does not believe that it should not be a crime, which means he understands. I went, wow, now he's trying to move back to the center again, because he does. He does believe in open borders, but he even realizes that's a tough position. If you want to separate yourself, even in the Democrat Party, maybe it's best to say, well, I'm not saying that it shouldn't be a crime, but we should still let everybody across. He's trying to ride that fine line. So you can tell that there's a recognition of the fact that if you get accused of being an open border advocate, that will work against you in a general election. And but the other thing is the economy and the president. And I, as soon as I heard him say it yesterday, or I just went, oh boy, he's going to get blasted tomorrow, where he said this is perhaps the greatest economy we've had in the history of the country. Well, obviously it's not.
No,
you had growth rate in the Reagan administration that was over 7%.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was 84, where they were over 7% growth. Nobody's ever given me that. Nobody in modern times has touched that kind of economic growth. And as we know, in the late 90s, and this is what they'll probably forget about the growth during the Reagan administration and bring up the fact that we had 4% growth, during the last 4 years of the Clinton administration. Mm-hmm. A lot of it driven by the bubble. Mm-hmm. And that's why we said part of the GDP growth in that time, when you're talking about the transfer of money, which becomes economic growth, which in essence it really isn't. The true indicator of economic growth is the additional goods and services that you produce in an economy over a period of time.
Right.
That's
right.
Not the GDP. The GDP is what everybody uses, but it isn't the best indicator. But it's the one that everybody judges by. And so when you say perhaps the best economy we've had in the history of the country, you're going to be fact-checked on that. And we have talked about some of the concerns in the economy. If the president is going to announce that at every single rally, that he is behind the greatest economy we've had in the history of the country, and he can't get 3% growth over the next year and a half, he will be eviscerated by Democrats for that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's, again, that's the Achilles, that where there are things that he can control. The president can control a number of things in that equation. And the first and foremost is the tariff situation. Get that off the table. There are other dynamics in the economy. The president is not going to be able to move much, and we'll see where that goes. But looking at the right now, what used to be one of the leading indicators was transportation of goods, trucking. And I was reading in Business Insider right now, it is unbelievable. Spot loads down 62% year over year. This is rates down 20% year over year.
That's
in May.
For May.
Yeah,
that's
right.
Now, and
May,
they were
year over year.
Now, trucking was one thing that was up in April,
mm-hmm.
but the rest of the transportation sector as a whole was down in April.
Yep.
But then trucking followed in May.
And a lot of drivers out there that are this Business Insider story talking about how, because that May over May is important. You look at what it goes back to factory output. Okay, mm-hmm. Stuff comes out of the factories. Trucks take it. They take it wherever, to the ports to be sent elsewhere. Or whatever it is. And if you have a slowdown, obviously, in those exports, you have to look at what the dynamic is there. A few things were happening, the rise of the dollar, but also the tariffs in place. The president can control the tariff situation. And that has to happen very quickly. That's going to have to be put, you know, to rest and not revisited. Because, again, you want to reinstill the confidence in those trade partners to establish, cement those trade routes, and you also want to establish that trust in those producers, farming and manufacturing. Those industries need to be behind the president. That's a fact. He's not going to win without the farm belt. He's not going to win without, you know, the blue-collar workers showing up for him. So all of that has to be reestablished, and that's something he can control. And he and Steve Mnuchin need to get on that. There's supposed to be, and he mentioned
an extra long meeting
with President Xi of China at the G20 next week. We knew that was scheduled. After the walk away from China, we had no idea if it was going to happen.
Stock market responded to that.
It was hundreds of points right away.
Right.
Surging. And that tells, again, that's what you're looking at. So get that deal done. We know how important it is. We know how sensitive it is, certainly with China. And a lot of that is on China. I don't want the president to cave on China, but he's going to have to do a couple of things. If he can't get the deal done, he's going to have to have a constant line of communication to the American people as to what's going on with China, why we are doing this, and why he has to stand on the line there, and he cannot waver. He cannot He cannot compromise that deal with China. Otherwise, we'll never get a deal with China to get them in line on intellectual property and other items along the way.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. We talked about the Politico article the other day that this is just a much more organized, well-financed campaign for Trump. So much better organized than it was. They said it was the analysis that they had from 2016, and they proved it yesterday.
Right.
Because I got an email from Trump telling me to support him I have never received an email from the Trump campaign ever. Mm-hmm. And I've never been in contact with them in any way where they would get the email. So when I saw it yesterday, I went, wow.
I got one from Swalwell.
Alan Grayson.
Yeah. It was an SOS signal. Please.
So, again, there I was looking at the Hill.com, the five takeaways. There aren't five takeaways you can take
look,
from this.
Nothing has changed. The issues are still the same for this president, and I'm okay with that. Let's see where it goes. I think he has to, and I think he should have all along, pointed to the House, regardless of who occupies the House, who's leading the House, who controls the House, and say that we need the money from Capitol Hill on the wall, and you need to call them every day when it's not done. You need to call them because that's how this works, and they need to fund it, and we need this done, and please call them. And, you know, I would just have you can schedule those tweets to go out every day. Just have that one go out every day until the end of your presidency. So it's not that difficult to do. But beyond that, it is about the economy, because right now, if you have these analysts, if they are correct and things are going, they believe we're headed to a real slowdown, then that's going to be an issue, of course. But get out of the way of the economy. Get out of the way and take all those factors and off the table when it comes to the federal government. The things you can do as president, get them done, get them out of the way. And everything else will be
well. You know the White House is worried because of the never-ending going after the Fed. You've got to lower the rates. You got to lower the rates. Mm-hmm. So, and let me tell you that if you're concerned about interest rates that are still extremely low,
mm-hmm.
when you look at the history of interest rates in this country overall. And this administration is that concerned about it.
Yeah.
There's a worry inside the White House
sure.
that the economy may not be going their way.
Sure. Because, I mean, you want those rates low so business can borrow money and, you know, and there can be greater growth.
But the economy has cooked. When they were getting 7.2%
yeah.
GDP growth rate
mm-hmm.
in the mid 80s under the Reagan administration, rates weren't nearly this low.
For Travel Centers of America, here is your forecast.
Temperatures for this time of year, right at about the mark that you'd expect. The high 100 plus readings in the desert southwest and southern California extend over to western and southern Texas. Up into the 90s for the deep south today. A good swath of the nation from the central part of the country all the way through the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast will be in the mid to upper 80s. For the Pacific Northwest, we're still in the 70s today, and in some higher elevations of the Rockies, 60s for daytime highs. Rain chances today, not very prevalent in the west. Look for showers east of the Mississippi to extend from Missouri into most of western Illinois today. And then around the Gulf states, we'll see a good chance of showers. Mainly cloudy, though, for the south and midwest throughout the New England states, so pop-up showers are not out of the question. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
The show that never stops. Red Eye Radio.
Yeah, that's true. We never stop, Gary. We're podcasting 24/7. Make sure that you go to redeyeradioshow.com. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, everything. The Extra Mile Podcast about the trucking industry. I sit down with people from the trucking industry. We talk about everything from gadgets and technology to ELDs and regulations and everything else. RedEyeRadioShow.com. Every day we podcast this show. We want to thank our podcasters. The numbers have been phenomenal here lately, and we thank them.
Yeah, they have, and it's so easy, especially to download the app.
Yeah, so
on Android, and the fact is, and I've got Android in it, you know, and it's just when I did it, when I downloaded it, you download it within what 20 seconds. If you're on Wi-Fi, within 20 seconds, it's downloaded, and you go right to it. And once you hit it, you're streaming. You're either streaming right there, or you just look right there, hour one of the previous day, boom, you hit it, and it's on.
And take it with you. You know, it's right there on your phone. You're going to take that with you. I had a friend tell me just the other day, and I love this friend dearly, and the message was, promote your app, because it's so easy. I love your app. It makes it easy to take the show with me when I'm listening to podcasts. And so do that. Download the app. Just go to, you know, wherever you download apps.
And, you know, we're being extremely self-serving here.
Yes.
Actually, this is something that we have heard from so many of our listeners over the years, that how many times do we hear, you guys should be on during the day?
Right.
Well, we actually, you know, we actually are. And, and now that, you know, the technology over the last 10 years, with the apps and the quality and everything else is just wonderful. And so we're really doing this in response to many of our listeners who said, we just don't know. And we still get it. People, I'm going to be off. I'm not going to be able to listen live anymore.
Hmm.
Well, you can listen to the podcast.
Right.
And so many. What is it now? How many people have smartphones? 80%, 90%
now? Oh, yeah, yeah.
So it's just so easy. And we always have, you know, young people will call us. And, you know, folks, we had a couple of young people last week talking about it. I'm trying to get people to listen to your show, podcast.
And share it. I mean, you can do that. Yeah. You can share that with your friends. If you like this show and you get something out of it, please do that. So, again, redeyeradioshow.com. Go to, you know, the Google Play Store, or you can go to the Apple Store, and you can download the podcast very easily. And please share that, and we thank you because we love to have the discussions. We break down the ideas. We get a lot of compliments on that, and if you think that's a great thing, then let's help other people find that as well. So thank you.
I decided to do a little bit of research, and this after when I heard the president say this may be the greatest economy of all time, and I went, oh boy. As soon as you hear that, you say, oh boy, he's going to be hit on that one, because, as you know, we've told you before, that you look at the mid 80s and you see, in, for example, in 84, where the GDP growth rate was double what it was last year. Over double of what it was last year. It was over 7%.
Right.
Last year, the president hit a high point of 2.9%, which was still greater than the average of the Obama administration by almost a third, but certainly not the greatest in the history of the country. Then, you know, the president's tweet storm yesterday at the European Central Bank, because they're talking about, I forgot what you call it, stimulus. You know, stimulus. And interesting, when I was reading the Wall Street Journal yesterday, they were saying, you know, Trump actually isn't yelling or going after the European Central Bank and telling them not to lower not to do the I got mind blank here, the stimulus.
Yes.
I don't know why I keep forgetting that. It's stimulus. He's actually sending a message to the Fed, because that's where he's been railing, you know, to Mr. Powell and saying lower the rates. And you have to understand, and we've talked about this before, it can be a way to help jumpstart an economy. But we just checked.
Yeah.
Right now, the Fed rate is, as of this would be May 1st, 2.39%.
Okay.
What was it in 1984? 11.23% July 1st, 1984. Roughly five to over five times, well, roughly, probably a little less than five times, roughly five times what it was, the interest rate, the base interest rate, five times greater than it is right now. And so the fact that the president is screaming the 2.39% or whatever it is right now, I mean, it changes, as we know, every single day, but that's the figure around, you know, where it is. Since the president is screaming about that, well, I'm sorry, that rate remains the same, but on the treasury bonds it can move. I'm sorry,
let me apologize for that.
On the treasury bonds it moves, you know, every day. The fact the president is screaming that's way too high shows that the White House is concerned about economic growth over the next year.
Sure. Sure.
Because that isn't a number in itself, and the president's trying to make the case that that's one of the major reasons that the economy isn't doing good because of the Fed. That's incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
That interest rate, really, whether it's 2% or 3%, is insignificant if everything else is going good.
Right. And that's kind of the position of the Fed itself, that if we've got a strong economy, that those interest rates going up, that's not going to hinder any of that leveraging from anyone. Basically, it's the cost of money. I mean, it when it comes down to it, in business. And that's not going to slow.
Oh, and by the way, the president rallying against socialism.
Hmm.
Just so you know, a government attempting to manipulate their currency, whether it is the Chinese, whether it is the Europeans, through stimulus, whether it was the Obama administration or whether it's the Trump administration. That's the ultimate in socialism.
Yep.
So the president is screaming against socialism at the rally last night, yet he is promoting much more government manipulation that the, you know, because he's a politician and he's telling the Fed what to do. Now, we believe at times the Fed has been, the majority of time, is clueless. And I still don't like the concept of the Fed setting rates by sitting in a meeting. I really think it should be much more of a free market situation. So you can call both political, but the system, the way that it is set up in an attempt to manipulate an economy by people in pseudo-government positions, analyzing the economy and therefore dictating that short-term rate, I've always thought is bogus to begin with, because that concept in itself is socialism. Let the free market do it on a floating rate. What are they willing to pay for it?
Right. Yes. No, I'm now, with you on that. Because it is that supply and demand. It is that, I mean, if you go back to the mid-80s, right? I would have to go back to business leveraging, you know, in terms of corporations and even small businesses. But we as a consuming public, we're not doing the same kind of leveraging. The 80s really became it was becoming that because we were, you know, it was the boom period for malls. Go shop all under one roof, major retailers being the anchors in those situations. And we started spending money at a higher rate and we started wanting things right away. It became we were changing as a society. We wanted a lot of the things, the stuff, as George Carlin used to say, and a lot of it was status symbol stuff, but it was, you know, I mean, we became consumers in a different way, and we started using credit cards in a big way during the 80s. But if you go back and look at it at 84, we really hadn't reached the height of that just yet. And I wonder, because, again, you would think that 11% in 84, if people weren't leveraging, if business wasn't leveraging, trying to leverage, that there was less of a demand for that those rates would be lower. Again, that, I mean, in our,
right, right.
in our equation.
Yes.
And,
yes,
and the supply
yes.
and demand thing. And so again, but it does come down to what the White House believes, what the president believes is going on with the economy. And they know right now that it is, a lot is dependent on reinvestment. We can throw billions of dollars at farmers, but that does not get those trade routes reestablished. We can do a lot of things right now that, you know, the federal government can do to get us through, or to get the farmers through, those lean times. But at the end of it all, that is not an expansion of wealth. We're going to have an expansion. That's an economy growing.
What you're trying to say is, and no, I think that's a great point, because a lot of people say, yeah, but the government's taking care of them. No, the government has put them on a welfare program.
Yes.
But we're losing at that point the ability to sell those goods.
Right.
Or just deciding not to grow those goods, which mm-hmm. means you're not increasing the economy.
Right.
Not only are you hurting the economy because those goods aren't being sold, but then you're borrowing more money from future generations to have another welfare program, this time for farmers, based on government policy.
And it is it's not the expansion of wealth that happens with, like, whether it's the oil industry in states where the production is high. You see the residual effect, or you see the offshoot of that with housing. You see that with restaurants and everything else surrounding that, which basically supports that industry. The same thing in the Farm Belt. If you're a farmer and you're getting the government to write you a check, you're still not going out and buying a new John Deere because you know you don't need it. And so it stops right there at your bank account. And this is why this is in part why those states are saying right now, no, let's get back to work. Let's get back to doing what we do, selling our products to other nations. Let's get this off the table. It is more difficult with China. We talked about that. The U.S. has, I think, a great position. The problem is that I don't know what happens at G20. Certainly China's feeling the pressure, but they don't do propaganda the same. The political fallout certainly isn't the same now that last year that they lifted term limits again, and those are gone. Mm-hmm. But nonetheless, they do feel it, and they do have to control that. We just don't know to what extent, but if they're going to have to change their laws,
there's a lot of internal pressure in China.
And what we don't know right now is where they are based on the walkaway. If they have to change their laws, they know the threat of that. You're opening a Pandora's box, and you'll never be able to close it if you're inviting more capitalist ideas and more capitalism in your society. Then that gives more power to your citizens, and ultimately
less power to the central government.
And China is, of course, going to resist that. So we'll see what happens in the sit down next week at G20 with President Xi. But frankly, I'm not very hopeful.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. So I guess the only analysis that I can get, and again, there's mega analysis on this from the media, and you're going to see it tomorrow and everything else, is that the issues are basically the same as the issues were in 2016.
Yep.
That's not the media is trying to make that a criticism of the president. It's not.
No.
Because
no.
Those issues have not been resolved. And the main one really is illegal immigration. And so we'll see what the president does on that. But I thought the president laid out the present. The first hour was laying out the present situation.
Yeah.
And yeah, airing his beefs. And he's got some legit beefs. And understand, too, the political war, you know, because the crowd took off at CNN. There's a political war between the Republican Party and the media.
Mm-hmm.
Look, Jim Acosta in his book wrote what? Well, we can't be normal journalists anymore because of Trump. They've even said he's even admitted we're activists. So once you admit you're an activist and not a journalist, then the media loses any type of moral high ground that we're in it just to make sure that you tell the truth. No, we're an activist. No. We hate this guy. Well, then you're part of the political war, and you can't sit there and be a crybaby and say he's attacking the media. No, he's attacking media activists.
Yes.
And there's a difference.
Yep. And there is a difference because Acosta just wants to debate. When he's in the press room, all he has ever wanted to do is have a debate with the president. And when he's losing that debate, he changes the topic.
Well, you can't sit there and say, we've abandoned journalistic integrity and then claim that you're journalists.
Right. Well, you never had the integrity in the first place.
Right. And as we stated a long time ago, they're not journalists, they're activists, and they can't change.
Right.
They can't change because we, well, maybe they'll learn something because of the, remember after the Mueller report? Maybe they'll learn something. No, they're not, because they're not, they've never been journalists. Activists don't change.
Nope.
Activists, no, don't, activists don't care about the truth. Right. They're activists.
Right. That's what it comes down to. And then they pretend to be journalists. No. I again, this is the ongoing debate, but the president is on the right track, I believe, on a number of things. Let's get those economic issues off of the table, and the campaign right now is strong otherwise.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning.
All across the world. How dare you?
All across the world, yeah, because we can podcast, yeah. All across the world, America, everywhere, 24/7.
Yes.
There it is, from the Washington Examiner. This is what we're dealing with. Nearly three-fourths of Democrats don't know what Medicare for All actually is.
All right. Good night. We're going home. Drive safely. We told you.
Can we go on vacation now?
What did we say?
That we don't do a talk show anymore. Because you can't do a talk show. You really can't argue with the other side because they don't know anything of what's going on.
We could be at a bar right now. A bar still open until 2 a.m. in our
yes.
state?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes.
And if we go up to parts of New York State where I'm from, they're open until 4 a.m.
I heard that.
Yeah.
About bars. Now, were some clubs here in Texas at one time that stayed up until 4, but they have to stop serving at 2 a.m., but they stay up, and so the band plays till 4. I don't know why. Have a point. If you're going to have a bar, you're going to have to serve drinks.
No, sorry, we can't do this today. We talked on alcohol on yesterday's show.
Yeah, well, I was just going to say, the band starts to suck really badly at like 3 a.m.
Nearly three out of every four Democrats believe a Medicare for All program includes an option for people to keep their private insurance if they like it.
Do you Democrats?
I'm sorry, but do you ever learn?
If you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor. If you like your plan, you can keep your plan. Haven't heard that before, have we? Anyone?
Medicare for All, also known as single payer, consists of one government-run program that provides every American with Medicare coverage.
Uh-huh.
Single payer programs require that people drop private insurance providers and sign on to the government-run healthcare plan.
Mm-hmm.
Several Democratic 2020 presidential candidates, such as Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, are running with Medicare for All plans on their platform. The majority of Democrats, 73%, believe that Medicare for All allows people to cover government-backed insurance if they want, according to the Navigator Research poll released Mondays. Republicans are less confused on the issue, with 55% believing that Medicare for All system requires each person to drop their private insurance and switch to the government program, government-run program. So the majority of Republicans know what Medicare for All is. The majority of Democrats do not. The vast majority, landslide numbers of Democrats, do not even know what Medicare for All is.
What did we say a while back about the pollsters? You guys need to start screening for who knows what about the topic.
Oh, well, they're doing it.
Yeah, well, they're doing what we want now. Well, but you see the whole thing. Go back to the other polls. Oh, yeah, we love Medicare for All. What is it? I don't know.
No, we said that a long time ago.
Start with the three branches of government. Right. Name the three branches. Can you? Please name them. Okay, goodbye.
Look, we started this with the travel ban.
Uh-huh.
When the judges would come out and we said, no, the people that were at that time, remember the travel ban, they were accusing Trump of being a fascist. Mm-hmm. And we had to remind them, no, if you support these judges who believe that they have a say on the travel ban, you're the fascist.
Yeah.
And that's where we started. We said, we have to start now because they'd be asking these polls, is the judge right for stopping the travel ban? And we said, well, no, you can't ask that question first. So this goes back over 2 years ago. So you can't ask that question. You first ask them if they understand the balance of powers, the three branches of government, the separation of powers. And you have to find out if they know about that before you ask the question and then eliminate all of them, which means you would basically have 100% participation of all the polls with conservatives.
You know, what was it? Was it the movie? I think it was the movie Parenthood. And I'm pretty sure it was Keanu Reeves that delivered the line. I got to go back and check it. You have to take a test to get a driver's license, but any blankety blank can be a parent. Right? Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. I don't know that we'll ever, and it's been for a while, but we really won't for a long time or ever know how people really think on the issues. If the pollsters don't pre-qualify them, on things like this, we're not talking about how you're going to vote because people will just go out and vote, and those can be accurate. But on what people know, it's really interesting because, again, that has to be the pre-qualifier for anything else, how they feel about what the wall, the border security, Medicare for All, single payer.
Well, we got to ask now, do you know what a wall is?
Oh man, this is getting so hard.
Do you know what a wall? We have to start from the very basics here. Do we not?
Do you support the president at building a wall? Oh wait, no. Okay, let's back up. Do you know what a wall is? Do you know what the border is? Okay, in what direction from the United States is Mexico? It's not west, it's not north, it's not east. Which direction is it? Honestly, point to Mexico on a map.
Do you know the difference between Mexico and New Mexico?
Oh, my gosh. Is London in New England? I want to go to the new one. I don't want to go to the old one. We laugh because, well, we become an ignorant society. And how does that happen? How do we get to this point? Indoctrination that you and the treatment of children to the extent that, no, you don't need to learn something. You need to just show up and we'll take care of you. And don't worry about meals, mom and dad. We got that. We've got now three squares a day for your kids. We'll do the parenting too. And a snack. And they may be soon enough showing up for a midnight snack. I don't know. Which the whole thing is that it comes down to the treatment of children to have them believe that earning something is too hard. You don't go get an education. It's a process, and you really earn that knowledge through the work. And earning anything is wrong. You shouldn't have to do the work. This is why I said with free college. Well, okay, imagine we got that done. Let's jump into the whole unicorn world, and we got that done. Well, next step would be, well, wait a minute. The work is hard. I don't want to go. Okay, here's your degree. Sign this. Here's your degree. Because we're doing that in schools. Now, I'm not talking about the teachers. I'm talking about a society that is insistent on having children believe that if you fail, it's wrong, that we can't have children fail because they feel bad about it. You cannot have a valedictorian. You cannot have a one student doing better than the other, regardless of how hard that student works.
Oh, by the way, since you just brought that up, who else besides me, the first thought that went through your head after you found, and I can't think of his name right now, after the Parkland student, remember he tweeted the or whatever the racist thing back in when he was 16 years of age, so Harvard has said, okay, you can't come here. How many of you had the same first thought that I was good, he doesn't need to be indoctrinated at Harvard?
Right, David Hogg, you're talking about?
No, the other. No, he okay. He got it. The other kid that.
The one that didn't get
the one that didn't get in
because of the
right. Who besides me went? Well, it's probably better for him. I wouldn't send my kid to be indoctrinated at a place like Harvard or Yale.
Mm. Someone made the point too about on social media today about Hogg and the difference in the grades. In other words, it's your ideology that gets
your
you in.
Yes, exactly.
It's not what you earn. And that goes back to our point.
Right.
It's not what you earn because the kid's doing the hard work. Oh, sorry, you can't be the valedictorian even though you outperformed every other student. I saw something online. I think it was Newsweek or Time. I have to go back and find it. But what happens if your child really tries hard in school and they still fail? Sometimes that happens. And so there are a number of things that have to be changed along the way. So what is not working, what is working, and that comes down to the individual student.
As opposed to me,
mm-hmm.
who did not try hard and failed.
Well,
and
yeah,
had to go to summer school.
I knew when it was on me because I went through high school with A's and B's, and I really didn't have a problem with education at all. I mean, it was it was in our home. You were going to do your homework and everything else. I had a personality conflict with one teacher, she didn't like me, and she was in the right, by the way. I mean, I knew that then. She had a stricter standard than other teachers in that course along the way, and I was being lazy, and I also was very nervous about doing my final grade, which was standing up and doing an oral book report. I didn't like talking in front of people. A few months later, I was on the radio. But I knew it was me. But today, it's very different. You know, back then, Gary, we'll borrow from one wise man and also the whole mission that failure is not an option. We talked about that recently, about our endeavor as a nation to go to the moon, to travel to the moon. But that was kind of back, at least with my family, with my parents, failure most definitely was not an option. And again, I know teachers are out there, educators are out there, and many of them are doing excellent work, but the problem is their hands are tied by a system that more and more wants to treat kids who don't try, who are lazy, like I was at times, as the same as any other student that is working all the time to improve their grades and do everything they can to make progress in their education. And it's ridiculous.
So 51%, just over half of Americans, support a Medicare for All program. When asked about a Medicare program that covers every American but destroys a private health market, it reverses, and 53% oppose such a plan. Americans also tend to oppose a single-payer program if told it will lead to higher taxes and longer wait times, two hallmarks of such a program. Well, look, we said this yesterday, and I think maybe the Washington Examiner was probably responding to Bernie Sanders the other day, stating that people would be delighted to pay more in taxes, and this is when he was hit, he wanted to make sure he covered the middle class, because it's not the rich, they're just going to pay for it. The middle class will get hit. When he said they'd be delighted, we said, actually, that goes against the facts that exist already in history. His own state would not pass a single-payer system because they couldn't afford it. The only reason that the left wishes to have a single-payer system in America is because they understand that it will be future generations that will pay for the health care of today. But what we found out is in Vermont, what we found out in Colorado, what we found out in California is the people or the Democrat leadership, when faced with having to raise taxes, backed off on a single-payer system. Why? We said, go ahead. As we said, I'm fine if 50 states decide what they wish to do with health care. Go ahead. 50 states can decide. Don't make it an umbrella for the whole federal government to have Medicare for all and kill other people's choices. Why are the Democrats always wanting to destroy people's choices? And that's what they do constantly. Yep. We want to destroy people's choices, and we wish to have a monopoly.
Yes.
By the way, I've never had a response in 25 years of asking that question. And the question is, Democrats and liberals hate monopolies unless it's a government monopoly.
Right.
What's the difference?
Which is the ultimate monopoly because you control everything.
You control everything. Right. That's even much more of a serious situation than if you have a private monopoly, because there's still competition that history proves will take you down.
Yes.
Government monopoly, you get to do all the regulation.
Mm-hmm. You make the rules.
There is no possible competition because you make the rules, because you make the laws.
Right.
Always has amazed me. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Tips from J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated on trip planning. All drivers know that finding secure parking spots is an increasing problem. Let's consider ways to win the parking battle, like pre-planning when and where you will stop. Download a truck parking app that helps identify available spaces. Start your day earlier and grab spots before they're filled. Find a well-lit area, like a truck stop or a department store lot, if allowed or permitted, that's less appealing to thieves. Secure your truck by closing windows. Use window screens or shades. Be sure to hide your valuables. Use anti-theft devices like a container, fifth wheel, and air brake locks. And use an in-cab camera to document suspicious activity. Staying safe and within the hours of service is important. Having a sound parking strategy helps with both. This tip was brought to you by J.J. Keller and Associates Incorporated. Visit us at jjkeller.com.
This has been the Meritor Driver Report, brought to you by Pilot Flying J, Shell Rotella, and Meritor Aftermarket. Run with the bull.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Welcome and good morning, and thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it.
Yep, thank you.
Coming up on the show, Ocasio-Cortez under fire for concentration camp remarks.
Yeah, words have meaning. Let's be clear that you can talk about the detention facilities not being the best scenario, but why are those detention facilities necessary? What would happen? In other words, what does the left want? We're not going to build these massive communities down on the border in order to detain people for a short period of time. That's not going to happen. And why are they necessary? Well, because people are coming here. They make the choice to come here. And we are a nation of laws. At least for now, we still have laws, Julian Castro, about coming across our borders. And we will enforce those laws. That's something that is not the fault of the United States. It's not. I have friends, a number of friends in the Border Patrol, and one at a very high level. And I can tell you right now, those individuals are not uncaring. They are working to the best of their ability every single day to make sure that everyone is taken care of in that situation. But these are not concentration camps.
Well, again, this shows you the ignorance of history.
Yes.
Because if you understand history, that's the last thing that you would ever say.
Mm-hmm.
if you care about history and you actually care about the oppression of people, you would never say anything like that.
If you care and respect the people who are either descendants of or maybe Holocaust survivors, then you would keep your mouth shut on such items. That's greatly disrespectful to people who went through that and their families who know of the horrific stories surrounding that experience.
We'll get to that and more coming up following the bottom of the hour, 866-90-RED-EYE.
DPF is cleaned. Their DEF is in the SCR. Their ELDs are up to date. But their CDLs are expired. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye. See, people are ignorant.
Yeah, what's that?
Got a response. Well, come on, guys. The Massachusetts single-payer system works. Massachusetts does not have a single-payer system. All I can say is ignorance.
This is because if you look at Bernie's plan, he said no private health care can be involved anymore.
Yes.
It would outlaw essentially private health care.
Yes. Massachusetts is a subsidized system.
Right.
Of subsidizing private health care. It is not a single payer system. But again, this is what we deal with, and that was the whole point. Democrats are completely ignorant about health care.
Yeah, right.
But thank you for making our point.
Yes. And this is all part of it. This is because time and time again, we get whatever it is. Remember years ago, one nice lady called us and said, oh, no, we'll do it differently because we're the U.S. Okay. All right. But no, that applies really to a lot of the modern ideas surrounding Or people, I guess, supporting socialists.
Right.
The right person
is doing it this time.
They just did it wrong.
Right.
Because it was, remember, for a few minutes, it was, and it was a while, actually. Venezuela, look. Okay, we're still looking.
Yeah,
are you looking?
We remember laughing at it at the time. We're like, Wait for it.
Exactly.
Because of Michael Moore was on it big time, remember?
Right.
Oh, the great success. And
right.
Bernie was at that point, too.
Right.
The great success of Venezuela. See, if the proper people run a socialist system, it works just fine.
Yeah, right.
Mm. Yeah. No, it doesn't.
It's like they were going to come out with this new tourism thing. Venezuela. We do socialism right. It's actually, okay, there was news that Maduro may be hoarding gold or using gold to survive, essentially, for his self-preservation.
Hiding the gold.
Hiding the gold and all of that. That's funny. There was a guy named Saddam Hussein that was doing that kind of thing. The idea of what happened, how it failed. Like you said, we were all seeing it. It was like, okay, you guys don't get it. You guys don't see what's going on there. Go and live in a society like that. All the liberals who still today, some of them that praise Cuba and their model of communism. And we said, hey, how about you go and you look at you talk to all of the Cuban immigrants in Florida. Just have a, I have an idea. A town hall meeting in Florida with the Cuban immigrants and ask them why they left. Ask them, because they know firsthand. Ask them why they left. ask them what was wrong with it and how we could do it better.
I don't need to. I've watched Godfather 2.
Exactly. But it's ridiculous. It's absolutely ridiculous.
Well, who's remember when was it in his healthcare movie? Michael Moore raved about, about Cuban healthcare, and who was it from MTV finally had enough?
It was Kurt Loder.
Kurt Loder from MTV finally had enough with it. It's like, come on.
He was like, and what was the, what was the documentary? It was only like a 30-minute thing that he promoted. I think it was something like Dead Meat or something. Yeah. Remember that Kurt Loder said, if you want the real story, go watch this. You know, I think it was only about 30 minutes. Kurt Loder was, is a libertarian. I think he's still with us. But head of MTV News forever. Do they still have MTV? Is it still around? I actually don't know. I guess it is.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yes.
All right. What do they do? Are they doing sports now?
I don't know. Teen mom shows.
Brian's a big fan.
Now I do have MTV. I think it's MTV Live.
That's all concert videos. That's cool. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I know. Yes. Yeah.
I've had enough of the Muse type concerts from Europe.
No, that's a good point. A lot of those are really.
I've had enough of the. What would you call it?
I don't know. It's kind of
techno alternative.
It's kind of like a new age alternative techno
thing.
Yeah,
exactly. It's like
right. Yeah.
It's okay. It's time to stop now.
Let's cover all genres, of rock and roll.
Yeah,
There is rock. We do have rock and roll here in the States. But that idea, and Kurt Loder broke it down, and the ignorance that Sicko wasn't a documentary. It was a propaganda film, probably funded by the Russians. We should check into that. How many Russian nationals were working on that crew? The idea of that we're going to do it better as a nation, that we have more resources in order to fund it. It doesn't matter that you have more resources. You still can't pay for it. You might get away with it for a little bit longer because of the, as AOC calls it, deficit spending. The NPR response when she said that, we have deficit spending. The interviewer was too nice. It was NPR, so I get it. Because the interviewer responded, well, you still have to pay that back. I would have responded, what is deficit spending? Let's have a learning moment for our audience.
That's a great point. Every Democrat candidate, when they say something, should be asked, what is it that you're talking about?
Can we have a learning moment for our audience? You're very generous with your time. Please tell us.
What is deficit spending?
Yes. What is deficit spending? Please tell me what that is. Of course, I know what it is. You know what it is.
Well, yeah.
Our audience knows what it is. The critical thinkers. They get it. You guys are great, by the way. I'm not just patronizing. Okay, I am. I'm not patronizing for self-benefit. Okay, I am too. But the whole idea is this. It's like the polls. The pollsters need to say, all right, we need to qualify you. Name the three branches of government. And then on the topic, whatever it is, Medicare for all. What is Medicare for All? Can you tell me what Medicare for All means? It's being promoted by Bernie Sanders. Before we ask your feelings about it.
Do you know what it is?
Do you know what it is? And so it's because the whole thing on voting about, who you're going to vote for, really, it falls away. Nothing really, you can't really do it there because it doesn't matter. Hatred for Trump doesn't matter, right? Darn sure wasn't going to vote for Hillary. Okay. You're not going to get anywhere with it. But on the issues, you qualify it. You pre-qualify it. And with the lawmakers who are out there saying such ridiculous things, I would, of course, I know it was a live video that she did on the concentration camps, AOC comment, but I would That would be the first question I would ask her the next time I saw her. Can you, let's have a learning moment for our audience. Can you tell us about the concentration camps? Let's not talk, right. We're going to talk about the detention centers here in the U.S. in just a moment, but tell me, let's educate our audience. Give us some history on concentration camps.
Right. Since you're making the comparison, define what concentration camps are.
Yeah. Please help me educate our audience.
Yeah, we'll get to that coming up here in just a couple of moments. You know, you'd mentioned the Kurt Loder, formerly of MTV, libertarian.
Yeah.
I only troll once in a while, but I troll with a sense of humor.
Sure, yeah.
And I did troll a libertarian the other day.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Now, I am a conservative libertarian.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what was it? Remember we took the test a couple of years ago and you were like... You were like 83% and I was like
86%. Yeah.
86 and I was like 78% libertarian or whatever it was.
Right.
And so this is a woman by the name of Jess Mears, who was apparently, you know, had worked for the Governor Gary Johnson when he ran for president as a libertarian. And she just wrote something. And it was all in good sense of humor. But she wrote, I really hope that the first libertarian president will host a slumber party at the White House for the libertarians who have been working their posteriors. Mm-hmm. She uses a different word. Mm-hmm. Posteriors off to end the two-party system.
Right.
And my response was, well, a true libertarian would not think that it is the federal government's role to host a slumber party for supporters of the first libertarian president.
You know, and then I posed a weird question.
Yes, you did. Yes.
All right. So I thought, because it hit me, I thought, well, wait a minute. Can a true libertarian really ever be president of the United States? I'm not saying can they win. That's not what I'm saying.
Right. Well, because, and one of the points is, could a true libertarian, by the way, this is all just
theoretical.
This is all theoretical. Because could a true libertarian ever be accused of overusing executive power?
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
With an executive, an executive order.
Yep. Right, right.
If they were accused of overstepping their bounds, you know, because you put on executive order and the courts say, sorry, you can't do that. Oh, I mean, that'd be trouble for libertarians at that point. Right?
Exactly.
Because libertarians are about.
Well, and you are in today's world. There are things like we said about Obama during the transition period. And after Election Day on 2008, we said, okay, for those who idolize this now president-elect, keep in mind he's going to have to do things that are presidential once he gets into office, and you're not going to be happy with that. And sure enough, by the end of 8 years, it was what did he do for us from many. And so I would say this for, you know, the again, assuming it was accurate that this person was a true libertarian, what all these things, all these duties as a president that they would have to do would fall outside in many ways of the libertarian umbrella and agenda. Right?
Yeah.
And how do you do that? Now I know the Rand Pauls of the world and others, and I don't know, I didn't pay enough attention to Johnson to know. I always go back to the what's Aleppo question. Somebody asked him about Aleppo and he's, what's Aleppo? But the, yeah, I know.
No, I'm not going to say it.
I know.
Can everybody read my mind on that one?
Yeah. He's high. But the idea of having to govern as a president, as a commander in chief, in today's world, requires decisions that would be far outside of thinking.
And, well, the projection of American military power
that's
in
my
itself.
Whole point.
Exactly.
Yep. Well, Aleppo.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carly, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. We go to Ben on Long Island. Ben, welcome. You're on Red Eye Radio. Welcome to the show.
Gentlemen, God bless you.
Thanks. Thank you.
My question is this. Why isn't the left ever taken to task for the crazy things they say, as you were alluding to? For example, Adam Schiff said for sure Trump messed around with the Russians.
Yeah.
He said he had proof. You still have Pelosi coming on TV, national TV, saying the same thing. Can't they be sued for libel or slander or whatever the hell, you know?
No.
I don't understand how this stuff, not to mention, look at how Trump's whole image has been, sabotaged for 2 years of this phony, kangaroo court. The only time that I've seen the left taking the test, I saw Cruz on TV debate Sanders, and he made him look like an idiot.
I remember that. The reason when you say taken to task, they're not taken to task because a significant portion of the people that vote for them agree with them and think it's okay to lie.
Yeah, thanks.
And when you think it's okay, when you know that your supporters don't care if you lie, you're not going to be taken to task for it.
Right.
Now you can be taken to task. Has Adam Schiff been taken to task? Yes, he has. Mm-hmm. We've taken him to task.
Sure.
Other conservative media has taken him to task because of what he has actually said, and we've been pounding on it for the last year. He's lying.
Yep.
He's he lies when, we've said, he's lying because otherwise Gerald Nadler would be calling him to testify because he said he knows where the collusion happened and he's got the evidence. Why isn't he bringing it forward? Because he doesn't have any.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Thanks so much for being here this morning. We do appreciate it. Look, to the last caller who was saying, why do the Democrats get, and he was talking about Adam Schiff, get away with lies? Why aren't they held accountable? Well, the only people that can hold you accountable as a politician when you lie is the people that vote for you.
Yep.
That's the reality of where we live, and understand that. And look, there are people, we've talked about it now. We've talked about when you look at Obama. Obama lied about health care. The Obama administration, and we believe that he knew very well, lied about a terrorist attack on Americans in Benghazi. You have Democrats that attempt to, nothing really happened there, and nothing illegal was done. Well, they lied. They lied to the American public when they knew it was not a terrorist attack. When they knew it was a terrorist attack. I'm sorry. Let me get that right. When they knew it was a terrorist attack that happened because an election was coming up and they were claiming that, they had solved it. And so they claimed it was a reaction to a book, which was,
film,
mm-hmm. The video, which was completely false.
Yep.
And they knew it that night. We know because of the hearings and Hillary's own correspondence from her own correspondence that she knew that night that it was a lie.
It was proven.
They kept it up for 2 weeks, and the president knew about it. The administration lied about that. Trump, he gets caught in lies, too.
Mm-hmm.
His lies are usually meaningless. They're not about huge issues. But politicians lie. Politicians lie on the right and on the left.
Hold them accountable by voting them out of office if you don't like
it. Right. Or as we do, call them on it when they say something inaccurate or something that is false. And so with Adam Schiff,
You asked me what is a bigger lie than accusing the president, because there's degrees of lies, as we all know.
Sure.
There are white lies. There are mistakes that are made. There are things that you've said in the past that may not end up being true today that you have to reevaluate, that the media might call a lie.
Right.
But over the last 2 years, Adam Schiff has stated that the president colluded with the Russians. Democrats have stated the president committed treason.
Adam Schiff said he had seen proof.
He had seen proof of the collusion. He lied about it.
Yep.
I don't know of a bigger lie than accusing the opposition president of committing treason.
Well, Trump's
told more lies.
It is, and then they say he looks guilty because he's so angry about those accusations.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? The way he's handled it is a lot tamer than I would have handled it.
But no, when you're a politician, people can lie about you. Politicians can lie about politicians. They're public figures. And so, you know, that's if you want the biggest lie over the last 2 years, it's not anything that Trump has lied about. The biggest lie that has the potential to do incredible harm to a country came from the Democrats, that the president committed treason and colluded with the Russians. I don't know of a bigger lie than that, of accusing and doing it knowing what the Hillary campaign and the DNC did by actually going to the Russians and paying to get dirt from the Russians that was untrue, and then attempting to get or successfully getting a FISA warrant out of it, and then the intelligence agencies and law enforcement and the State Department and the Obama administration using that false information in an attempt to destroy the legitimacy of the 2016 presidential election. Go ahead. Tell me a bigger lie that Trump has told.
Tell me something more inherently dangerous. That situation domestically, and then on a larger scale, the deal that Obama did with Iran.
Exactly. Yeah.
Imagine again.
And didn't tell the truth about it.
Imagine. Trump had made that deal, and that deal was done in February of 2017, just days after being sworn in. And we're where we are today with Iran attacking oil vessels off their shore. Tell me where we would be. Democrats would be furious. And by the way, you and I probably would too if it were the same deal and he made it without Congress. We'd be furious because you would see the inherent danger. Is the left concerned about it right now? Not really. They're concerned that he wants to build a wall.
Look, the administration claimed that all the serious chemical weapons were gone. Remember that? Yep. Remember that
from
whole
Syria.
Scandal? Right, exactly.
And we called out Susan Rice in her final days.
Yep.
She was on TV saying, no, that had all been handled.
And it had.
It had not. And we knew.
And they knew it. Intelligence knew it.
We knew that Russia knew that. And we knew that the U.S. knew that. And that Russia was assisting Syria. And that Assad still had control of those chemical weapons. We knew where they were, and why we couldn't attack them was what? Because if we go in and send missiles to destroy those areas where they're being held, then of course that sets off chemical weapons into the air. So we were limited in what we could do, except we said, Susan Rice, Obama could say, hey, Syria didn't do what they said they would do. Russia was supposed to help them or us enforce the rules against them. They said that was going to be the case. Of course, that was never going to be the case.
Right.
And that's why you never had anyone, the president, Susan Rice, the former president, Susan Rice, or anybody else in that equation talking openly about it, because they knew they'd be telling lies. There's no way to say it, because Russia wasn't going to play nice. Assad certainly wasn't going to play nice. Syria was never going to get in line. But at least you could wave the flag and say, hey, attention, this is a problem. And Assad's not playing by the rules. The Russians aren't playing by the rules.
Right.
What were they worried about? Trump being president.
And then one of the other biggest domestic lies was on health care. Obama lied.
Yes.
To his people. I'm talking Democrats.
Democrats, not Republicans. There were no votes for Republicans.
He lied to Democrats that you could keep your health insurance and you could keep your doctor. So the point is, look, when Trump talks about how tariffs are great, how many times have we said he's lying?
Yes.
He knows they're not great.
Right.
Because of the reaction then when he says they're great one day and then pulls them out the next.
He would never pull them if they were great.
Right. So when he says that, he knows he's not telling you the truth. We've got no problem calling him. We don't have any problem calling anybody in a lie.
No.
But for Democrats to sit there and say that because of the untruths or misstatements of this president, that he's worse than anything ever before. We have memories.
Yep.
And we have seen the whoppers when it comes to, and think about this. You know, we talked about the lies with the Iranian deal.
Mm-hmm.
Ensuring that the world's biggest exporter of terrorism gets massive amounts of their frozen assets back. By the way, people always ask where the hundreds of billions of dollars came from. It was the assets that we froze from 40 years ago.
Yeah, from the Iran hostage thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And we ensured that they had, that money back at a time when we knew that it was a terrible deal, that it was a deal that could not, that made it possible for places where they could still develop nuclear weapons. Mm-hmm. It did nothing about ballistic missiles, which would carry the payload of a nuclear weapon. It was a terrible deal. It emboldened and enabled the world's leading exporter of terrorism. They lied about it.
Yep.
They lied about portions of it in order to sell it to the American people. That, you know, so let's just stop it.
Yep.
And as we've said before, I'm voting for Trump because he's the only option.
Mm-hmm.
Not perfect at all. Nobody's ever made that. Nobody's ever made that claim. Well, there may be a few people, but not many.
Outside of messaging and tariffs, good job so far. If the economy holds.
Yeah, if the economy holds, yeah.
Because there are things that you can't put in the, and politically it still happens, but you can't put in the corner of the president because they're not in the control of the president. So tariffs, and everything else, get out of the way, which they've done. You got corporate taxes down to 21%. Massive victory.
Nobody could have ever done that. That would not have happened without Trump.
I was saying all along, there's no way they'll get it down to below 30. I mean, they're not going to get it down to, and everybody was saying 25, and I was, no way. You got it to 21.
And the
tariffs and get out of the way. And there are other things you don't control, but you do control that.
And don't forget, help to increase our taxes.
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yes, we pay more taxes. Stupid Republicans. Bunch of morons.
I'm sure there are a lot of people saying, well, see, Trump got that right. He taxed Eric and Gary more.
Yeah.
Trump and the Republicans got that portion right.
Make Eric great again.
No.
No, break Eric again.
Yeah.
No, man. but we. By the way, we agree with the tax plan. We don't.
Yes.
We agree with the majority of the tax plan.
We agree with the tax plan for the purpose of saying it on the radio.
No. We agree with the majority of the tax plan.
Corporate taxes, yes.
There's a minority portion of it that we disagree with.
That's the part where we pay more.
The part that taxed us more.
Yeah. Stupid Republicans. 21%. Who cares? So what? Could have been lower. Who cares about corporate taxes?
By the way, do you see Bernie Sanders says he doesn't necessarily agree with the Trump administration on Iran, and Democrats are saying, how do we know we can believe the intelligence agencies? Well, when Trump disagreed with them, you were furious at him.
Exactly. Yeah. You can't have it both ways.
The intelligence agencies were absolutely perfect. Here's how we look at it. We see what the evidence is. By the way, and we've said this all the time, if you listen to the show, we don't believe any politician, right or left.
No.
We don't believe them based on the statement that we make, or they make. We base it on the substance of the argument and the facts behind it.
Right.
Whether it's Trump, whether it was Bush, whether it was Obama, whether it was Clinton.
Yeah. Can they back it up?
Right.
And we always tell them. We always say it. I mean, look, Brett Baer, great deal of respect. But when we go back to the Hillary email investigation and a part 2.0, and then it came down, and he said his sources told him that there would be indictments coming in the next few days, one night, and hours later we came in and said, your sources better be right. You're going to get burned on this. And sure enough, he got burned.
We had Sean on that a couple weeks ago.
Right.
When Sean said his sources say that Barr already has the IG report.
The IG report, yep.
We said, you better be right, because that looks...
Right. Because people are waiting for it. They know that something is going to come out of it, that there likely is something actionable by the Department of Justice on it. So that's what they want. They want something to be done. They want to see some people in orange jumpsuits. And not just on Netflix. So we have to go through it, and you and I have to, because we've lived through it, covering the Sarnia brothers going through Watertown, Massachusetts, one night, and getting hit on email. Why aren't you guys saying what it is? These are the people responsible. This is who they're chasing. This is who they're chasing. We said, we'll wait for authorities to have their presser, and when they do, and they name names, then we'll tell you.
And all the names.
We don't care about being first. We care about being accurate.
And the names that came out were inaccurate.
Yep.
That night.
Yep.
Never forget that.
Yep.
We were getting some pretty bad hate mail. You guys are covering. You're part of the conspiracy.
Yeah. Okay.
We always like that one. We're part of the conspiracy to not identify the identities of the Boston bombers.
Right.
Yeah, that was it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Sure, that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Because we collude with
I don't know
jihadists or
I guess
Al Qaeda.
It must be. Yeah.
866-90 Red Eye.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio toll free at 866-90 Red Eye.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning. Thanks so much for being here this morning. I didn't know about this.
What's that?
A Broadway depiction of former President Bill Clinton and former First Lady Hillary Clinton will be ending its run early due to underwhelming ticket sales.
Well, the real thing couldn't sell tickets, remember? Hillary and Bill went out on speaking tours
and
nobody was buying.
The production of Hillary and Clinton was scheduled to close July 21st, but the producer announced Monday that its final performance will be held Sunday, June 23rd. The play cost $4.2 million to produce.
Wow.
And had so far accumulated only $4.7 million at the box office, according to The Hollywood Reporter.
Mm-hmm.
The show, titled Hillary and Clinton, takes place in March of 2008 and offers a fictional behind-the-scenes look at the former Secretary of State's first presidential campaign, as then-Senator Barack Obama began gaining momentum
Right.
The play stars Tony winners Laurie Metcalf from Roseanne, right?
Right, yeah, yeah.
As Hillary? Yeah, as Hillary.
Wow.
And John Lithgow as former President Bill Clinton.
All right. I like Lithgow. I really do. He's really great. He was great in the show Dexter. But as Clinton?
I know.
I don't know. I mean, he's capable of pulling some stuff off. He is. He really is. I would have to see it, though.
The cast also featured Zach Orth as former Clinton pollster Mark Penn. And by the way, now, who was on Trump's side when it comes to the whole collusion thing. Mm. And Peter Francis James as Barack Obama, referred to in the play as, quote, the other guy.
Oh. Here's your forecast.
Temperatures for this time of year, right at about the mark that you'd expect. The high 100-plus readings in the desert southwest and southern California extend over to western and southern Texas. Up into the 90s for the deep south today. A good swath of the nation from the central part of the country all the way through the Midwest, Mid-Atlantic, and Northeast will be in the mid to upper 80s. For the Pacific Northwest, we're still in the 70s today, and in some higher elevations of the Rockies, 60s for daytime highs. Rain chances today, not very prevalent in the west. Look for showers east of the Mississippi to extend from Missouri into most of western Illinois today. And then around the Gulf states, we'll see a good chance of showers. Mainly cloudy, though, for the south and midwest throughout the New England states, so pop-up showers are not out of the question. A look at your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
They're guilty. Exoneration is not an option. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on Red Eye Radio.
Hey, stop it. We have done nothing wrong. Okay, no, we have done nothing illegal. Just need to be careful. Hey, we do podcast the show. Make sure you check it out. We want to thank all of our podcasters. We love you dearly. Thank you for being there every day for us.
Download the app.
Yeah, we couldn't do any of this without you. Why would we even try?
Talking to ourselves.
We would just, and we're not that interesting. Look, we thank you, and it's really growing, but make sure you go download the app. It makes it so much easier. Just wherever you download apps, Google Play, Apple Store, whatever, and check it out. And you can go to our website anytime, redeyeradioshow.com, click on, on demand tab. There's more there. Also the extra mile, truckers, we're doing a lot of stuff with, industry experts and individuals from, all sides of the industry, all different corners of the industry, talking about a number of things, regulation and lifestyles on the road and everything else. How to be more efficient in your operation. The extra mile is part of our podcast family, redeyeradioshow.com, keyword podcast, or click on demand. And thank you, podcasters. We greatly, greatly appreciate it.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
From Washington State yesterday?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Boeing won a landmark 737 MAX order from British Airways parent IAG on Tuesday. This according to the Wall Street Journal, ending a sales drought in the wake of the grounding of the aircraft following two fatal crashes.
Yeah.
The International Consolidated Airlines Group, SA, said at its Paris Air Show it had signed a letter of intent for up to 200 Boeing 737 MAX planes. It would buy the 737 MAX 8, the model that crashed in October and March, as well as the larger 737 MAX 10. Looking into the future, we recognize that this is a great aircraft, said IAG Chief Executive Willie Walsh. Mr. Walsh, a 737 pilot early in his career, recently flew a MAX simulator to access the flight control change that Boeing has proposed to address issues identified in the crashes. Mr. Walsh said he tested the original flight control system and the upgrade. It was a very helpful exercise. It gave me confidence both in the aircraft and the changes proposed by Boeing.
Hmm.
I mean, that's good. I'm telling you, that's good news for Boeing.
It is.
And,
you
it's,
know,
and it's good news for the American economy, too. It's,
early on, you and I were talking about it. And there was very little information at that time, and I actually said it. You know, this is one of those issues that because it seems to be systematic at some point, at least things were pointing in that direction then. This is something that could be extremely damaging to a Boeing and ultimately could prove the end to a company like that. But the fix came about. Boeing has been, I think, very proactive here lately in reaching out to the families of the victims. But that's always going to be the case. I mean, it's always the case after such a catastrophe. Then you get back to building the confidence in the flyer. And the confidence has to be there for any of those airlines to have your product in their fleet. That's just the way it works. And I think the flying public, by and large, there were obviously concerns early on, but I think they're probably that confidence will return ultimately. I haven't seen any polls lately about that, about would you be concerned with getting on one now, after the fix, right?
Mm-hmm.
After those issues are no longer in place, do you have any concerns there? Because, frankly, we're not talking about people who don't fly very much. We're talking about business travelers. That's a huge part of it. Or people like you, Gary, that fly, you know, several times a year. People like me that fly on a regular basis and don't have any kind of fear of flying. But you have to have the confidence in the equipment as a flyer. So certainly there is some confidence returning, assuming that all of those issues are fixed, and I'm certain they will be. There's no way they can't be. There's no way you can't be sure with, as a company like Boeing is going through this, they're going to have to make sure, they're going to have the confidence of the pilots. Beyond that, I wonder what changes, too, globally about the training standards for pilots. You think about the, in the Ethiopian Air crash, there was the story came out that there was a pilot in a jump seat that helped to correct a similar problem on another flight right before that crash. And I'm just wondering, because this has been brought up by friends of mine who are pilots and others, and you just wonder, will there be a new training standard for pilots? And I don't know, because every society is different. Every culture is different. And except for the fact that we share that one, you know, we do share that one thing. We share the airways. Every nation controls their own airways. And I wonder if the standards, if there will be a focus on that to increase the standards or have any kind of different trainings, maybe an international standard that is greater. Again, speaking as a layman here, but I wonder if there was an issue there to begin with, and if so, what do you do about it?
It will be interesting to see the final report that comes out from the National Transportation Safety Board, and not just why it happened, but what their full recommendations are for, I guess, automatic pilot systems.
Right, yes. What you can, the pilot can control at that time.
And whether it should be extremely easy for anything to be shut off and the pilot have control.
When you look at major, a lot of the major catastrophes, some that, you know, if you've been around long enough, and you and I have, with commercial flight, you look back at them. The Flight Channel on YouTube, by the way, has done this amazing thing where they're using simulator type animation, but they're going through the facts from the point that the flight takes off and who's on board and who's piloting and what the issues were that led to. And sometimes they land the plane, and a few times they've landed the plane and everyone survived, few injuries and. But most often in those cases, you're looking at a catastrophic loss of life. When you look back at it, and they do the findings at the end, they'll tell you this is what was found after the investigation. A lot of it comes back to human error. I mean, when there any human endeavor is going to mean that there are going to be mistakes made. This was different. This was according to what was going on and what pilots were saying about this. You know, they were saying they didn't have the control. They should have more control in a situation like that. And so there was a flaw, obviously, that was systematic. But we do have to remember, I think, that because it is a situation where humans are involved, and that was the whole idea of having the autopilot systems in the first place, you know, to assist the humans, right? But you look at those catastrophes, when you go back to many of those major crashes, it goes back to a human at some point making an error. And
yeah, when I watch why planes crash all the time, right, on Smithsonian,
right.
And at times you just shake your head.
Well,
and I'm they're looking at airplane crashes from the last, you know, 50 years.
Even sometimes
longer. But when you go back and look at that, even in modern jet airliner or something, you go, oh my God, that was pilot error. How could you, you know, how could you miss something like that? I'm still, because the Colgan Air that crashed, oh, but was it 10 years ago, 12 years ago, in, you know, right near my parents' house outside of Buffalo, New York, where they just basically stalled that plane.
Yep.
And they just, it was, you look at it, it's like, how does that happen with experienced pilots, even if you're extremely tired? How does that happen? How do you stall? Because that plane fell straight down. I mean, it came straight down.
Right.
And because it stalled.
Right.
And how does that happen, you know, even 10 years ago with modern aviation? Because that one was pilot error. So, right. I mean, you look at things like that. I tell you, I have a question outside of all of this, though.
Mm-hmm.
Because I fly the 737-800, not the MAX, but the 737-800 a lot. I fly the, once in a while, the 777 or the 787 that flies from Dallas to Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
I won't even touch onto the commuter planes. You know, Embraer, whatever
they call
that, that I've also flown. But really, the majority of planes that I fly are the 737-800. And then the Airbus 319, 320, and 321.
Right.
Why are Airbus planes so noisy? Hmm. You ever flown in an Airbus plane? You can hear the hydraulics. I mean, it's loud
inside.
You know inside
what? I never noticed the difference that it was an Airbus.
Airbus. And I said, I got to make sure I bring that up in the air one of these days, just when I've flown last time, because...
Right.
The one, and I, was it, maybe it was the A321 when we took off from Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
But I just, and not that I didn't notice it before. I mean, this thing, the noises, and the thing is, though, you're used to it when you fly an Airbus, but I'm wondering, what is
but
this?
It is a lot louder.
I mean, it is noticeable. It is a lot louder. It's, I mean, it's just like,
I just never noticed that. I never put it together that it was
It's an Airbus. Wow. Because and I started paying attention here over the last 6 months. I'm like, well, let me see if I don't remember hearing that in Boeing planes. Mm. And you don't. Now, if you're in a lot of the times, if I'm flying the exit seat, especially, you know, in the 737-800, you're right near, I mean, where the landing gear comes down.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can hear that when it happens, but it's not.
Right.
But I mean, it's loud inside. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's to the point of where some people probably are going, what's that? Especially if you're flying a Boeing all the time or different, where there's no noise, and all of a sudden you hear this noise. And I know I've flown enough in my life in every type of plane, especially with my father, who was a pilot. So it really, you know, I knew there was nothing wrong, but I just went, what is it about the insulation? I mean, where's the sound insulation on the Airbuses? Why are they so dang loud?
Right.
Because eventually you have business flyers that fly all the time saying, come on, what's this about? So,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just had to bring that up. I don't know why, but they are loud.
I've noticed it. I just didn't pair the two, that it was an Airbus.
Yeah, it was an Airbus.
It was always
yeah.
an Airbus.
I figured that out. Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep.
I think back to the Helios Air. This is a Greek, was a Greek airliner. The crash of flight 522 going back to 2005. I was just, you know, I had done some research on that because it came up on, on the Flight Channel. And you look at something like that, it came back to a switch being left on manual in terms of cabin pressurization. And that was done during maintenance.
Wow.
And then the pilots didn't recognize what was going on during the alarm going off. They didn't realize that until it was too late. And people don't know, but there is a limited amount of oxygen, really, in terms of the mass coming down. It's right. designed to get until the plane
minutes?
Gets, right. right, about, I think it's 12, but it right. could be 15 now. It's designed to last until the pilots can get you, because when they recognize the problem, they're going to go below 10,000 feet. And then below 10,000 feet, there's less of an issue. But they didn't realize that. And, of course, they learned, based on the investigation, they learned that. But there was one flight attendant who had some flight training that realized what was going on, and there was an oxygen tank in the galley. And he used that, and the fighter pilots that had flying by that time beside that jet saw him walking into the cockpit, but he was unable to recover the plane. He sent out Mayday several times, but to no end.
Wow.
But again, going back to, and it gets frustrating, but we are humans. There are mistakes that are made, and it, we have to remember that when we look at something like what's going on at a Boeing or anything else. It is a human endeavor. And hopefully Boeing can recover, but they have to do that based on the confidence.
Human endeavor, but it looks like this is because they didn't allow the human to take control.
And that's the whole point, is that the human endeavor brought about what? Autopilot systems, right,
mm-hmm.
to help. And then, well, but the human still needs to be involved.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio, 866-90-RED-EYE. He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara. Coming up following the top of the hour, one of the challenges that the Trump campaign is going to have to solve here, and it involves the fact, and Media Research Center did a whole thing on how the media portrays the Democrat candidates. You know, they don't even want to say they're socialist. Even if the candidates themselves say they're socialist, they don't want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we said it is up to the Trump campaign. They're going to have to do their own marketing. They've got the money to do it. That's why you have to do effective marketing on a consistent basis,
yep.
and challenge them and continue to challenge the media on their stories. Coming up.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.